People can, is this just like a, is it like a midterm week or something? Is that it? Are people having, people skipping my class? Is there studying for a midterm? It's going to put pressure on me to try to give a midterm.
No pressure at all.
All right. So today is the most important class we've had yet. Because in a way, everything we have done so far, it's all been leading up to this moment. So let's recap just a little bit with some of the topics we covered, and then I'll show you how, hopefully we'll see at least most of the ways in which all of them have been, will come together to this one wonderful topic that we're going to cover today, called Dhawani Triangulation. Dhawani Triangulation. Okay, so just a quick kind of recap. You know, we started with the simplest geometric ideas. We talked about lines and circles. We did things like bisectors, and just Euclidean construction. Bisectors and circumcenters. What's a circumcenter? Anyone remember the circumcenter? Tim, what's a circumcenter?
It's the center of the circle that's described in three points.
Right, so you unique center of the unique circle passing through three points. We got that, remember, by intersecting bisectors. It's purely kind of Euclidean constructions. And we went from that very quickly to linear predicates. Mm-hmm. And one of those linear predicates, of course, was like this. It was the incircle. Revisit the in-circle test today. After predicates, we put them to use and we solved this convex hull problem. And that gave us an opportunity to think about how to use the predicates. It also started thinking about polygons, convexity, representing a polygon. Then we went beyond that to representing arbitrary planar straight line graphs. And so we had data structures for this, and we had the basic incidence operations. And one thing we did not talk about, I'll put a parenthesis in here, it'll come up now, but updates. So our discussion of planar straight line graphs was mostly focused on navigating it. And put your finger down on a vertex or edge of face and walking around was local. But the natural thing to do as well is to make local changes. We'll talk about a nice class of local changes to planar straight line graphs today. We generalized this. We talked about polyhedral complexes, and I think that's what we got to last time. And a particular case of polyhedral complexes was triangulations of point sets. All of these topics lead directly and indirectly to Dhawani triangulation. So what is Dhawani triangulation? I'm going to say, given a point set, and we'll start in the plane, we'll keep it easy. So given a point set P, that's a subset of RD, del P, this is going to be the Dhawani triangulation, I'm going to denote it as del sub P, subscript big P, is the triangulation of P such that for every triangle, if I look at its circumscribing wall, that circumscribing wall doesn't contain any of the other points of P. So let me try to write that. For all triangles, triangles T in del T here, the interior, this precise, the interior of the circle, the triangle intersect the point set is empty. So here's the point set. Here's the triangulation of this point set. We can ask the question, this is a triangulation of point set. Is it the Delaunay triangulation? How would we check? Well, we look at each triangle, look at its circumscribing wall, like this one to start, and see if any of the other points are on the interior of this ball. So I'm going to go back and forth between saying circle and wall. I apologize, circle is just 2D. The ball is a more general dimensional term, and it turns out that this is something, again, we're going to write it in 2D, we're going to have all the theory for it in 2D, but it will all be true in higher dimensions by replacing triangles with syntheses. But for now, just equate the words circle and ball in your head, and this says, well, this triangle's okay, and if I draw this triangle, the circumcircle of this triangle, it's also okay, because this point is outside that circle. So this is the Delaunay triangulation. It's kind of a strange definition. Does it seem a little strange? Like, why is this the most important, wonderful triangulation there is? It's not clear from this definition. Does anyone have any questions about the definition? What it means? Do you have a sense for? Because it's not. There's a couple things that aren't at all obvious from this definition. One is that, that's the reason I put the in quotes here. Does it even exist? Is there just one? All right. First of all, the second question: is there just one? If I had 4 points on a circle. If I just started with a circle, and I picked 4 points on a circle, well, either of the two triangulations of this point set are Delaunay. So it's not really unique in this case, because there's only two triangulations. Remember, the triangulations have to have all the triangles, any pair of triangles intersect either not at all, or at a common edge or vertex. So I can only have either this triangulation, or this one. You can check the others, but there's no other way to triangulate this point. All right, so those are two triangulations. If I check, because I have this condition about being interior, they're both valid triangulations. They're both valid Delaunay triangulations. Because the circumcircle of any one of the triangles is the same circle. So if there's some degenerate configuration where you have more than 3 points co-circular, then you could get non-uniqueness of the Delaunay triangulation. I claim, and we'll see why this might be true, that if you don't have any degeneracy, so no 3 points collinear, obviously no 2 points on top of each other, and no 4 points on a common circle, then in fact we will get a unique Delaunay triangulation. Questions? Good? All right. Let's rewrite this definition into a language that we've already seen. So instead of saying for all triangles, the interior of the circumcircle, let's write it like this. For all triangles ABC in the Delaunay triangulation, and for all points D and P, I do in circle A, B, C, D, it should not equal 1. Because 1 is strictly interior, 0 is on the circle, -1 would be outside the circle. So I've rewritten this condition here just in terms of the linear predicate. Is that maybe a little closer to what the way you're used to thinking about this? We can take this another step, which is that, do you remember how we implemented the in-circle predicate? It was another linear predicate, but had a little twist, because somehow it does have a quadratic aspect to it. Circle is a graph of a quadratic function. And how we did that was, we said, well, in circle, A, B, C, D was equal to, again, the sine of the determinant. But of course, I needed something else because these are, this is four points each in 2D, so this was only 3 by 4. I can take the determinant of a matrix that's not square. What we did was we lifted them all onto a paraboloid. So this is the square norm of these points. And you remember that, I'll just write it up here. No one can forget. The square norm of a point is just the sum of the squares of the coordinates. And this has a nice geometric interpretation. When you take the point, A, you get another coordinate, which is the norm of A squared. That was like lifting the points onto a paraboloid. Because the graph of this function, the graph of the function F mapping plane to the reals by F of normal p squared, this, the graph of this function is the paraboloid. Okay? And you know, when we talk about the graph of a function, we're really just describing the set of all the set of all points which cause this well, the point is the set of all things in the domain and the range that make this equation true of all pairs. You can think of it as solutions to a polynomial equation. That's the other way you may be more used to seeing a parabola as like y equals x squared. So if instead I wrote z equals x squared plus y squared, okay, the paraboloid is just a set of solutions to this single polynomial equation. So set of all x, y, and z. So what did we do to do in circle? Is this what we did?
Divided.
You have to divide, right?
Yeah.
You have to normalize by the orientation of A, B, and C. Because if I put A, B, and C in a different order, they still define the same circle, but inside and outside gets reversed. So I'll just put, say, CCW of a ABC, and I think actually you get this right because of the number of dimensions in this case here. You can do an example and just check if that's right or not. That's just to normalize what counts as inside. Good. So to do an in-circle test, all we do is we take the three points we care about, we lift them up onto a paraboloid, look at the plane that cuts through them, and ask if we take the next point, we lift that one up the paraboloid, is it above the plane or below the plane? And we drew this nice picture, and I'll do the one-dimension lower version, which is the case where I just have, say, a line. I lift two points up onto the parabola, I cut through them with a line, and now, if I have another point, say this is my point D, well, if I lift that onto the paraboloid, it's going to be above this line. And if it's anywhere over here, I've drawn this line very badly. Let me try to do this a little neater. Any point to the left of A is going to lift onto the paraboloid above the line. And if it's only going to be below the line, it's only going to lie in here if it's between A and B. So in one dimension, a ball is just a line segment. So this is the easier one to draw. Last time I drew the whole 3D thing, but this is the whole idea. In fact, this is the idea in every dimension. So I replaced this 4 points with 4 points in R2 with 5 points in R3. I get an in-sphere test in R3. You should check that. Maybe I'll put it on the next one. So just the definition of Delaunay triangulation seems to be in terms of predicates, which can be written in terms of this determinant. But the determinant had a geometric interpretation itself, which was a lifting. So I had points in the plane. I lifted them up into R3, and now I'm asking questions about planes in R3. These planes have a special property, right? That the linear predicate all comes out to be either 0 or negative 1. Well, there was another time when we studied planes which had this property. We called them supporting planes, right? That these planes now are supporting the set P. That the entire set P is on one side of them. In this case, because this extra dimension is special, it's always above them. The whole set P, if I look now, let me go back and draw a 2D example. If I take 4 points and I lift them up onto a paraboloid, pretend there's a paraboloid here, and I take three of them, and I cut the plane through these three. That's a plane in R3. And the other point, if these 3 points form a Delaunay triangle, this other point needs to be above that plane. And if it's a Delaunay triangle, it means that actually every other point, when lifted, will somehow be above that plane. This leads us to a different definition of the Delaunay triangulation. At least another way of thinking about the Delaunay triangulation. And I'll just write it before I say it so we can follow along here. The Delaunay triangulation of points at P is the projection of the lower convex hull of the points after lifting them onto a paraboloid. I'll write it down, and then I'll let you chew this over here. Matter which paraboloid you lift onto, which is somewhat surprising. You can scale up the paraboloid, you can translate the paraboloid. This is always true. Alright, so let's take this example. Pretend I didn't add some extra points for a little easier on myself. So I lifted them up, there's a paraboloid here. I haven't drawn the whole paraboloid, but maybe when I draw the convex hull, what I see that I have this is my best effort in 3D here, that they're folded down. So there's two triangles on the bottom, and then there's two triangles on the top. Does everyone see that okay? If I project down the bottom ones, I actually get, well, the Delaunay triangulation. If I look at the top ones, I would get the other triangulation, which would not be Delaunay. Let's look at, again, these 4 point, it turns out, these 4 point examples tell us almost everything we need to know about the Delaunay triangulation in the plane. And it'll even give us algorithms. So let's look at, I drew an example where it was correct. Let's just have an example where it's a triangulation that is not Delaunay. Okay. So here, if I draw the circumscribing wall for this triangle, you can see it contains another point. So this triangle is not the line. It turns out that you can do, if you go on the other side of this edge and look at this triangle, well, that one is also bad. And this kind of badness coming in pairs always happens this way. Do you believe that? If you want to, so I can prove this, and it's going to come out maybe indirectly in another proof. But you should be able to see it maybe just from 4 points, because depending on how comfortable you are in visualizing in 3D, we sort of live in 3 dimensions, but we're actually not that good about thinking in 3 dimensions. And hopefully this is a little bit easier, because this is really what I call thinking in 2.5 dimensions. You have 2 dimensions plus a lip. Nothing is sort of, there's no, nothing layered on top of each other. So it's just 2.5 dimensional thinking. You take your points, lift them up, and you've only got, well, let's start with, say they're in convex position, there's only 2 different triangulations. You've lifted them up, there's a lower hull, which is 2 triangles, and there's upper hull, which is 2 triangles. What does it mean for the lower hull to be the lower hull? Well, it means that if I take the plane through one of the triangles, the other point is above it. And if I take a plane through the other triangle, the other point is above it. Now, this situation is reversed on the top. On the top, if I take a plane through one of the 2 triangles here, the other point is below. And if I take a plane through the other one, the other point is below. Being below the plane means you're inside the circumcircle. That's what we derive when we derive this as the incircle test. And so, at least for 4 points in convex position, there's only these 2 situations. Either you're the top of this tetrahedron, or you're the bottom. And one of them has both edges are good, and one of them has both edges are bad. And we can use this to do a couple things. Right, we're going to derive a condition for testing if a triangulation is delaying. And then we're going to use that to build a simple algorithm for making a delaying triangulation. So how do you start? So this is a nice little idea. It's called the flip. And a flip is just switching between these 2 triangulations from the top to the bottom. So if I see this bad situation, I'm going to remove this edge and put in the other one. So in pictures, a flip of, if I have A, B, C, D, I'm going to flip B, D, and I'm going to have all the points, the geometry stays the same, all the points stay in the same positions, but I remove B, D, and I add in A, C. We're going to do this flip only. You can get yourself in trouble, right? So if you have an edge, there's some edges we can't flip. So let's draw an example of one you can't flip. I claim I can't flip this edge. And the reason is that if I just remove this edge, then the edge I would have to add would be this one. Okay. Now, if I added that edge would be cutting through whatever triangles I had over here. So there may have been some other triangle. Or that edge might have even already been in the triangulation. So if the 4 points are not in convex position, you can't do this flip. I described it only in terms of the edge, but naturally, we're also removing these 2 triangles and inserting these 2 triangles. So when we talk about having all of the combinatorial information in this kind of straight line graph, the net change is remove one edge and 2 triangles, add one edge and 2 triangles. In this particular example, you may have looked at it and realized that Well, it was good before. It was Dewani, and I made it not Dewani. I'm not going to, in our first algorithm, I'm not going to do flips like this. I'll probably do them in the reverse. And it's easy to see that if I can do a flip, then I can undo a flip. And that's also a valid flip. So here's the formal definition. If A, B, C, D form a convex quadrilateral, flipping BD means removing BG and adding AC. I guess that's what I should also add here, and also the triangle. If the other side of this definition is, if we have A, B, C, D forming a convex quadrilateral, if I have A, B, C, D convex, then, I have an edge B, D. So if B, D is in there, is an edge. Then we're going to say that BD is flippable. So this should be pretty easy here. Might be new, but the concept and even the word flip, I guess maybe it comes from thinking about the edge, sort of flipping the edge. We can also think about flipping from bottom to top, or top to bottom, of the in this lifted version. So very, very closely related to being flippable is another definition of something we call being locally Dewani. All right, so we say BD is locally Dewani. Dewani, and I'm going to write just LD most of the time. It's locally Dewani if BD is in the Dewani triangulation of just the neighbors here, A, B, C, D. Okay. So if I have many points, if I have a whole triangulation, okay, let's start with triangulation, and I look at a particular edge, there's a couple questions I can ask. One is this edge flippable? In this case, yes, it's flippable, okay? I can also ask whether or not it's locally Dewani. And that means that I look at just the triangle on either side, and I take just these four points, and I forget about all the other points. I could have had points right here, I could have had points right here. I forget about all the points except for these four, and I ask, is that edge at least in the Dewani triangulation of those four? So locally, if I put my blinders on and forget that there are points that aren't touching this edge, then if it looks Dewani, then at least it's locally Dewani. You should be able to see immediately that this is a much easier condition to check than to check if that trunk, that edge is in the real Dewani triangulation. How do you do it? You just need to run two in-circle tests. You've got 4 points, you just have... In fact, you can get away with one in-circle test if you know it's a good triangulation. You would just check to see if this is A, B, C, D. You would just check if C is in the circle ABD, and you check if A is in the circle BDC. If both those return false, so the circumcircles are empty, then this is locally Dewani. Question? Yeah.
So does the Dewani triangulation, so does it ensure that like there are no like obtuse angles between the triangle? Like, it's like a test of like how, or it's like kind of creating, make like the most equilateral, like, you know?
Yes, there is there, it's true that this kind of picture makes it look like you're somehow making, if you have big angles like or small angles like this, you're going to want to flip them. And there is, there's another characterization of the line triangulation, which we won't do today, but maybe we'll do it next time, which is that the line triangulation maximizes the minimum angle among all triangulation methods.
Okay.
That's one of the many reasons why it's the most wonderful triangulation we have. You shouldn't be able to see that just from this. Maybe you can, but it takes
some work. Because if you have like a 60-60-60, then that's like the most way separated the circles could be. And then it goes to 45-45-90, and then you get the overlap when you flip it.
Yes, so the intuition is right, but if you have... you have to figure out in what sense it makes it the most equilateral.
Okay.
Because if you replace, say, max min with average, like maximizing the average angle, I don't think it works. So you have to figure out what the objective function is. But it is optimal in one sense, just maximizing the minimum angle. So locally Galani, flippable. These two probably seem related. Let me tell you how exactly they're related. I think you're going to need this. So if I have an edge in a triangulation, that's not flippable, I claim that it is locally Galani. All right, let's try that. It's a nice little line here. If some edge E is not flippable, then E is locally Galani. Why this be true? Well, if it's not flippable, it means that the two triangles on either side form a quadrilateral that's not convex. So here's our edge E, and it's something like this, right, where this point has to be inside the triangle formed by the other ones. Otherwise, it would be flippable, right? So what do we need to check? We need to check to see if it is in fact locally Galani, and what does it mean to be locally Galani? So, well, I'll give these points. I'll use the same terms here: B, A, B, C, D. The Galani triangulation of four points like this, where one point is inside the triangle of the other ones, is always the same. In fact, it contains every edge. So, del A, B, C, D. I really should be able to draw a curly brace. So it's clearly a curly brace. But I can't. So that's what that is, I promise. So I claim that del P contains all edges. And if you want to try to visualize this in terms of the lift, what's happening is I lifted these four points up. I have a tetrahedron. And I have the tetrahedron has one triangle on top. The upper hull is the whole triangle. And the lower hull are these three triangles. So before, when we have the four points in convex position, there's two different ways to triangulate it, corresponding to the top and the bottom of that tetrahedron. The same thing is true here. Let me draw you four points, and one point is in the interior, the other ones. When I lift this up, no matter how I lift this up, these three points will form a triangle, and since this point is inside the triangle, it's certainly inside the circumcircle, so it has to be below. So it's somewhere down here. And so the lower hull here are those three triangles along the bottom, one, two, and then from the back side. How are people doing? Are you able to visualize this a little bit? This is the kind of 3D, or like I said, 2.5D way of just seeing why these statements are true. You can translate that intuition directly into statements about the predicates. Okay, so the in-circle tests, but in this case it's maybe easier to just see that the circumscribing circle of this, of these three points here for this triangle on the bottom, B, D, C. It's, if I extend the line BC, I know that A had to be on this side of that line. And I know that if I extend the line BD, A had to be on that side, so A had to be inside this wedge here, which is also outside of this circle, sort of this sketch. So A is not inside this circle, and the same kind of idea works for the other triangle. So what's nice about this statement is that, at least the nicer version of it, is the contrapositive. Contrapositive says, if it's not locally belonging, then we can flip it. And this is an algorithmic idea now. And it points to a very simple, kind of greedy algorithm that may or may not work, but it's an obvious first thing to try is that if I have any triangulation of a point set, and remember last time we did prove one always exists, at least one exists. If you start with any triangulation, if you want to make it DeLaunay, what you do is just look for an edge that's not locally DeLaunay and flip it. All right. Well, let me write what that algorithm would look like. I call it the flip to DeLaunay. So it takes a triangulation to start with, and just greedily flips anything you can find that's not a locally belonging. So while there exists E, that E and T, that is not locally belonging, T becomes T with a flipped and like I said, it's not clear that this terminates or gives us a DeLaunay triangulation yet. Maybe those are major questions. Terminate. So why might, in principle, this not terminate? I mean, it's a while loop. Termination condition is just that everything is locally DeLaunay, but you're making these changes, and when you flip an edge, it goes from locally DeLaunay to DeLaunay. So I'm sorry, it's from not locally DeLaunay, it becomes locally DeLaunay. And so it would seem like maybe after you've flipped every pot, at most you have to flip every edge once. Is that true? There's a problem with it. And the problem is that when you make one edge locally DeLaunay, you could turn other edges which used to be locally DeLaunay to be no longer locally DeLaunay. And so you can cause some damage when you think you're correcting things, and well, it seems like maybe it could loop. You can kind of get into some weird cycle where you have to flip an edge and then somebody else flips it back and you have to flip it again. Actually, it doesn't happen. But first, let's see why locally DeLaunay from edge doesn't really mean DeLaunay. I think it's coming here. Burn this into your memory. We're going to need it. Think about a good question while I'm doing this.
So you're saying it's not necessarily to have, if you have a local Delaunay, doesn't mean it's Delaunay?
Yes, for single edge. Okay. Because it's only Delaunay if I forget about the other points. See that this Delaunay, just the four points are, that are in the two triangles on either side of the edge. So locally Delaunay is not Delaunay. Where here I'm going to use this word when I refer to it as edge or a triangle as being Delaunay, I mean it's in the real Delaunay triangulation. It's in del P. Okay, why is this true? Well, it's something you will learn very quickly when you try to draw examples is that you want to draw a circumcircle of a triangle, even though we know you can do it with a ruler and compass. The thing to do is you draw the circumcircle first and then you draw the triangle. And you'll always get it right. Here's a triangle, and it's going to be locally Delaunay. So let's make it locally Delaunay. All I need to do is make the other triangle on the other side, but this edge is locally Delaunay, as long as this one is outside. But it's not necessarily Delaunay because I could have another point in here. So if this is our edge E, note that E really is locally Delaunay. If I didn't have it, if I only looked at these four points, it's in a Delaunay triangulation. But when I would look at all of the points, this point is inside the circumball of this triangle. And so the actual Delaunay triangulation of this point set is going to look very different. It's going to be something like this. All right, but still, we're going to stick with this algorithm. Let's see how that, what the algorithm does on this example, and we'll see if we get to this something like this red triangulation. At first, it says, well, E is locally Delaunay, that's fine. But this edge here is not locally Delaunay. You're going to have to take my word for it, but I think you can see if I drew this circle here, it would be inside. And so what I would do, the algorithm says, well, this is an edge that's not locally Delaunay. The lemma says it's flippable. I can flip it. I'm going to. There we go. Now what happens is, this edge E, which was locally Delaunay, is no longer locally Delaunay. The loop says, if I have an edge that's not locally Delaunay, flip it. So that's the next one. Flip it. Okay. Now, this edge is still locally Delaunay. So that's good. This one's not locally Delaunay. All my edges are locally Delaunay. You should check that you believe all the convex hull edges are locally Delaunay. You don't have a good definition for what locally Delaunay would be for convex hull edges. Since we're requiring it to be a triangulation of a point set, we'll just say that the convex hull edges are always locally Delaunay. We're done. The algorithm terminates, and the question is, okay, at least it terminated on this example, but is this the right answer? And it turns out it is. This really does produce a Delaunay triangulation. Okay, I guess let me stick with the order of my notes. First, I'm going to prove that this does always terminate. Or at least show you a picture again. Why should this always terminate? And it comes down to this lifting. If I have just four points, because every time I do one flip, there's only four points involved. And let me start with the example that's two copies of the same example instead of four points. What happened was this was not locally Delaunay, which means that in the lifting, these two triangles at the top of the tetrahedron in the lifting, and in the other, and this is the same lifting over here. Where I flipped it to be the bottom. Okay, so each time we do a flip, if you look at the volume from these two triangles up to their lifting, the total volume decreases. This is really nice because what it gives us, volume then, gives us a function from the triangulation to the real numbers. Right? For any triangulation, you have lifting. The lifting is fixed. When I do a flip, it doesn't change the lifting because the lifting only depends on the coordinates. It's just lift onto the paraboloid. And so, but this function is monotone with good flips. If I have a flip that takes me from not locally DeLongian to locally DeLongian, then the volume decreases. Okay. There's only a finite number of triangulations, and I have this monotone function. So every time, I can't repeat a triangulation. So the geometric claim that I hope is clear from this picture is that flipping to locally DeLongian, and this is LD and this is not LD, decreases volume. That at least implies termination. How many flips? Does it tell us anything about how many flips we might have to do? I mean, the argument I gave you was just that since there's only a finite number of triangulations, it can't ever repeat one, so it can't flip forever, but the number of triangulations of points that can be very, very big. It's not a number. It's a high art just counting, given a point set, figure out how many triangulations there are. It's a hard problem. I claim, though, that you should be able to see that n squared flips should actually suffice. And part of that comes from the fact that there's only order n squared edges, and you're not going to flip the same edge twice either. So it's not just that we're going to not see the same triangulation twice, but you won't even see the same edge twice, because the whole triangulation is moving downward. And once that edge is flipped out, it's somehow not on this terrain that's moving down. So I talked a little bit about terrains, but this kind of lifting argument and looking at the surface you get from lifting a triangulation, thinking about how that surface changes, naturally does come up when looking at actual terrains like of the Earth, where the height was given by airplanes flying over with LIDAR data or something. But now let's see that it actually gives the right answer. But not only does it terminate, but it really is a good triangulation, or a good DeLongian triangulation. Alright, if T is a triangulation of the points at P, so if T is any triangulation, I'm going to use this shorthand to write out the word triangulation, that's far too many letters. Triangulation of P, it's not delta to the N, such that all edges are locally DeLongian, then T is actually equal to the Bolling triangulation. So let's look at an edge. Here's the proof idea. Pick any vertex. And any triangle. Okay, this is a nice way to start because we know something about T locally, about T's edges, but what we want to prove is that it's equal to the line triangulation. And the line triangulation said, well, for every triangle and every other point, that point is not inside the circumcircle of that triangle. So pick any vertex. I'm using the word vertex for the points. The same vertices are the zero-dimensional faces of this complex. So you pick any one of them, you just have to check that vertex is not inside the circle that triangle. So let's call it X, and let's call it triangle ABC. So we need to check that for this triangle ABC, at some point P is not inside circumcircle. Okay, I'm drawing it, so it's outside. But let's show why. So I'm going to pick any point X inside the triangle. So it's inside the triangle. And we'll look at this ray, this straight line, and it goes straight through. I need to show that, let's look at the easy case first. The easy case would be if P was just the other vertex of the triangle opposite this edge. If this was the case, like I said, this triangle and this triangle, the definition of being locally Galoni for this edge would imply that P was outside that second wall, and we'd be done. But remember, we had some bad cases. If you remember what this triangulation looked like before, like this, where here was a point, if this was our point P and this was A, B, and C, even though this edge is locally Galoni, it doesn't tell us that whether or not P is inside or not. So we'd have to actually look to some other edge in order to guarantee that it's not here, that it's not encroaching on this triangle ABC. And so, if P is not this point, then there's some other point, let's call it D, which is the other triangle that contains this edge AB. And we just picked that particular edge because that's the edge that the line from P to X cuts through. Okay, so I just labeled A, B, C, but I picked A, B to be the one that hits that edge, the line from P to X. And the idea is going to be that we're going to look, if P does encroach on A, B, C, if it is inside the circumcircle, then it's going to make some other triangle along the way, some other edge that it cuts through first, not locally along. Okay. So, and the way we'll actually get this is we're going to count the number of intersections in this line segment, the number of time edges it cuts through in the triangulation. So it'll be an induction on k equal the number of intersections between px and the edges of the triangulation. So in this case, maybe there's only two, but we don't know. There's some other number of intersections here. But what we can do is, if k is zero, if I can get from P to the inside without intersecting any edges, then P would actually be inside this triangle. It wouldn't be a triangulation. Maybe not as interesting. If P is 1, that was the case we just looked at. Because if P is 1, that means that P actually was this vertex on the other triangle. And it would just have to cross that one edge to get into X. And that one edge is locally Delaunay, so P is outside that circle. Well, on this line segment, there's another point. We can pick a point inside triangle ABD. Let's call it X prime. And X prime is the line segment from P to X prime cut through one fewer line segment. Okay, so by induction, the induction is going to say what? That if it crosses through fewer than k edges to get into the triangle, then it doesn't encroach on the circumcircle of that triangle. And so by induction, since I can get into this triangle crossing only k minus 1 edges, it must be the case that P does not encroach on the circumcircle of ABD. Help us. Let's draw it. So here's the circumcircle. And we also know another thing, which is that P is on the side of this line A through AB that doesn't contain the triangle. So we found two big areas where P is not. We know that P is not inside this circumwall. And we know P is not in this half space. But guess what? We call this H and this B. You can see that the circumball, I'm switching between balls and circles again. The circumcircle of ABC is actually contained in B union H. You have to check that really happens, but it follows from the definition of locally Delaunay. This piece of the circumcircle of ABC, this little piece in here, has to be contained in the other one because this edge is locally Delaunay. All right, and since this, I wrote P is in this, I meant P is not in this, right? Sorry. I'm going to call that B. So if P is not in here, P is not in here, but the entire circumcircle is in here, we get that P is not in the circle of ABC. Right, this is all we needed because we picked an arbitrary vertex and an arbitrary triangle. And so for any old vertex and any old triangle, we find that vertex is not inside that circumcircle. Here, I mean, this is the interior of these circumcircles. We know that it is Delaunay. It satisfies the definition of Delaunay triangulation. And this is much nicer algorithmically because it said that simple greedy algorithm really works. You can just look locally to see if it's okay, and if it's okay everywhere locally, then it's also globally okay. Whenever you have a property like that, it's very useful for everything. Can we bound the runtime? I claim that n squared flips. That n squared flips really does just come from the fact that when we remove an edge, it never comes back. If I wanted to have notes, I'll scan them, put them in. I hate actually going through these proofs. But if you want to make an argument like this precise, the reason an edge doesn't really come back is that this is a function, right? This volume, the lifting is a function on the vertices, right? It lifts the vertices onto the parabola. But we extend it to a function on the whole triangulation. So you can think of this lifted triangulation as the graph of a different function. It's a graph of a function that's flat in certain places, right? It's everywhere, it's sort of locally flat and it folds. It's like a polygonal mesh that you might see in old style computer graphics, or just new but bad computer graphics. You see all the ridges and such. So that's a function from the interior, the entire convex hull, or the convex closure of the point set to the real numbers. And it's the terrain, this piecewise linear surface now in R3, is the graph of this function. And that function is just an extension of the function on the point set. Is that clear? Because that the parabolic lifting is a lifting of the whole plane to the reals, right? So we can think of its graph as a surface in R3, but we're restricting it to just the vertices. We're only lifting the vertices up, and the rest of the space just has to stay flat. All right, so now, if you take any, as you go through the algorithm, from step to step, Each time the loop can only do one thing, which is flip one edge. Every time it flips an edge, that function, then you get a new function because you have a new triangulation. And that function is less than the function before. To say less than or equal to, which is to say point-wise. At every point, the function value must non-decrease or non-increase. So things can only come down. And so if I look at an edge, and I ask, at some later time, could this edge ever appear in a triangulation? Well, I just have to look at the function value at the point at which it was disappeared. So this is some point in the middle of the edge. That point is now strictly above the surface, and this surface is only going down. And the triangulation we get is only the low, this is the projection of that surface. So I have something like more specific notes about that, but I prefer you have the intuition than just illusion. What's maybe more interesting is to see that this upper bound of n squared could be tight, that there's actually going to be a lower bound. In this case, lower bound, we just need to find an example. Lower bounds for a specific algorithm, all you need to do is show an example where it must do a lot of flips. In fact, it might must do order n squared flips. So let's see what that example looks like. Sometimes the n squared flips are necessary. It depends a lot on what triangulation you start with. So if you start with a triangulation which somehow is very far from the Delaunay triangulation, you can have to do a lot of flips. And here's a nice way to come up with a bad example. You take n over 2 points, and you put them all on a line. Now, okay, this looks degenerate, but imagine I kind of bend the line a little bit. And I have another n over 2 points over here. I didn't actually count them. Let's see. Four. Okay. Now, the Delaunay triangulation of this point set is going to have this edge right down the middle, and it's going to just connect this up to everybody. I'm going to erase it, because we're not going to start with a nice Delaunay triangulation. It wouldn't take us any flips to get there. Instead, we're going to start with something really bad, which is we're going to take the edges going as diagonal as possible. So I take this one all the way over here. And I'm not sure with this many points if I'll even be able to draw this example. So pretend I've drawn all the edges from that one point all the way over to here, and from this point all the way up to there. And I'll just get rid of some of these. 4 is good enough, I think. Okay. So in an example like this, so since I've bent these up to have this kind of bow shape like this and a little bit bowed like this, you have to take my word for now that all the flips that could happen to make the Delaunay triangulation among just triangles on this side, they don't affect any of the triangles that go across, and all the triangles in the triangulation, Delaunay triangulation that include just these points, again, we can assume that we started with the best triangulation there. So maybe no flips happen over there. They don't affect what goes across, and all the work is going to happen when we go across. Right. So, this picture is so bad. Here's what we're going to say. We have to take a particular triangulation and give it a score. And when I give it the score, it's going to tell me something about how many flips I have left. And I want to prove that this triangulation has a really high score, like n squared. So first, let me just define, label these points, q1 all the way to q n over 2. And let's call these down here on the bottom, p1 to p n over 2. And the score of this triangulation is the sum from I equals 1 to n over 2 of the min over all qj adjacent to pi of the absolute value of I minus j. So for a particular I, say I equals 3, I look for point p3. And I take the min in absolute value difference point from Q. So it's Q, or the J, such that QJ is adjacent to PI. So what the twiddle will mean adjacent. That minimizes this the absolute value of the difference here. So maybe the nicer picture looks something like this. I just put them on top of each other. I guess this can also be made to work. One, two, etc. So if I looked at a particular point like. The problem is that this one actually is the Delaunay triangulation. So with these all shifted, I guess it doesn't help. All right, pictures are the same. Let's just make a quick observation here that the correct Delaunay triangulation this is okay. This is not the Delaunay triangulation. What should we really get in this case? And it's maybe much easier to see than in the skewed case, is you expect to see nice little boxes, right? And you expect to get rid of all these long, skinny triangles cutting across the whole thing. and we have to get there, and we have to do some flipping. And obviously, when I get to this at the end, this min term is always going to be zero, because it's always going to be connected to somebody with the same index. P2 is going to be connected to Q2. P3 is going to be connected to Q3. And so that the score from the Delaunay triangulation is just going to be zero. Okay. Now, if we want to compute the score for this triangulation we started with, which we'll call T bad, the score for T bad is the sum from I equals 1 to n over 2. Well, everybody is connected, everybody's only connected to Q1 on the bottom here. So this is just the sum of I minus 1. Because right? 1 is connected to 1, that counts for 0. 2 is connected to 1, that counts for 1. 3 minus 1 is 2, so it's the sum of I equals 1, which again is order n squared. Great, and now we just need to check that. What is the change in the score when I do one flip? In this case, it turns out, since I've bent these a little bit, there's only one flip that I can do. At least in the first triangulation, the only flip I can do is to flip this long, long edge. So let's do just that one first. I need another picture. I'll just keep drawing pictures with fewer and fewer vertices until the pictures look coherent. Okay. In this case, the only edge that can be flipped is this long one. Okay. If I do this flip, what do I change? I have this point, which was Pn over 2, is now going to be connected. This is a bad case. Pn over 2 was already cheap, because it was connected over here. But we connect this one, Pn over 2 minus 1, n over 2 minus 1. This point is now going to have this new edge. So in the cost over there, before his only neighbor on top was Q1, now his neighbor was Q2. So this changes by 1. Everybody else, all the edges are the same. This point doesn't lose anything because it was already connected at the top. All right. But after we do that, there's only these two flips that can be made. And these flips, again, all have the form that they take a point, some point pi, which has a long diagonal on top of it, and connect, but it was previously connected to some qj, and it connects it to qj plus 1, where j was less than or equal to I, which is actually less than I. So in this sum, the term corresponding to pi goes up by 1, and so going from t to t prime by one flip, we have the score for t minus the score for t prime. So every flip, the short version, every flip only changes the term corresponding to one of these points, and it changes it by just one. We started with a triangulation that has a score like n squared. Every time we do a flip, we gain one until we get down to zero. So the number of flips we have to do is like n squared. And this didn't make any actual assumptions about how we do the flips. So we're out of time here, but think about questions for next time. We'll do a recap and show you some other wonderful facts about the line triangulation.